The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today, on this day, very special day, as always, we've got a guest with us, and we're going to talk about an aspect of wild game that I would say people know about and people do, but it may not be as popular as I think. Maybe I'm incorrect. We'll learn more. If that's not a hook, I don't know what is. But I've also got Colin and Emily here with me. They're excited to learn as well. So some quick updates for me. New since last podcast. Went out on my birthday weekend. Got after some whitetail in eastern Colorado here. No whitetail to be found, but I did find a flat tire along the way, which took up about half my day dealing with the flat tire. And I took the kids out with me. But we still had a blast. Either way, it was a birthday hunt for me, so I got to spend doing what I enjoy most, and it was a bit relaxing. So I got one more weekend here to try to fill that whitetail tag, and then I am off to Wyoming to try to close out my elk cow tag up in central Wyoming. So those are kind of what's going on in my neck of the woods. I will remind you all, too, that this isn't the only podcast that we have here in the Harvesting Nature repertoire. We also have the Antler and Fin podcast, which is our audio cookbook. If you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. There's probably about 6 recipes on there now. We will be updating that very shortly here in the new year and starting on a regular cycle of providing recipes. So essentially what that is, it's like an audio cookbook. So you can pause and play and stop and go and move line by line, ingredient by ingredient through whatever recipe we have posted. We choose some of our favorites that come off the website, so you can always reference those for written. But some people like to listen and taste with their ears. That sounds weird. It sounded better in my head. either way. And also, too, I remind you guys, we got the Facebook community page. So that's the Wild Fish and Game community. That's over on Facebook, as I just mentioned. And it is a platform where you can kind of interact with everybody in the Harvesting Nature community. So from me to some of the executive board members to the field staff writers to everybody, we all post pictures and share adventures and food and recipes and all kinds of great stuff there. So that's a good place. You just punch that into the search bar of Facebook and request an entrance into the group, and we'll gladly admit you, and boom, all the fun will begin. Also, too, we've got our hats for reviews. So we like to offer this up. Anybody who leaves us a 5-star review with a written comment has the opportunity to get a hat. And I actually have a review to read today, which I'm pretty stoked about. So the review goes like this. I really enjoy and get a lot of ideas for wild game recipes, both from the podcast and the associated wild fishing game community on Facebook. Keep the recipes and great guests coming, Justin and crew. And this is from a follower, Tansi, T-A-N-A-S-I 373. So go ahead and shoot us an email at whatscooking@harvestingnature.com and pick a hat off the website and send us the hat you like and your mailing address, and I will get that in the mail to you here very shortly. So thanks for the review. Anybody can do that. You just do that from whatever podcast platform that you listen to. That helps us grow in our rankings on the old Apple podcast platform, which is the be all end all of a lot of podcast stuff. So, but now I'll go quickly around. Colin, I'll give you the floor. You got any updates?
Yeah, I do. Since I think the last time I was on was when I was in Colorado after our mule deer hunt. So if you hadn't seen on our Instagram, the next weekend after that mule deer hunt, I got an elk. So I got my first elk and first deer within a week of each other, which is pretty awesome. Much thanks to Ben. He's not here right now, but he knows. I appreciate all of his help. I'm probably going to do an Adventures for Food episode about the elk hunt because it was pretty fantastic. A lot of running down hills, speeding up a highway, and then running up hills, and then trying to quarter this elk in 55 degree weather and pouring rain and trying to get that out before midnight. It was quite an adventure. ended up getting, actually just got the meat back last week. Got about 108 pounds worth of meat. There's a little bit of loss just because of we were working fast trying to get it out of the rain, out of the relatively high temps. It wasn't as cold as I would have liked it, and it wasn't as dry as I would have liked it. Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. I actually have some elk steaks to cook tonight from it, so I've got a freezer full.
So and this is you did all this on the Coast Range in Oregon.
Yep, Coast Range.
Yep.
First day of the general season, public lands, DIY, over the counter, whatever other hashtags you want to throw at it.
what type of elk?
It's a Roosevelt elk. So it was a nice 5x5 bull. It wasn't the bigger of the two bulls in this small group that we saw, but the big one we saw went into the woods before it got a shot off. But yeah, pretty excited about it.
There's not very many people that can say they killed a Roosevelt elk for their first elk. So
yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, thank you. There's some really crazy details in there. Actually, Ben got a lot of it on video too, so we're gonna come out with a little film. But there's some just like crazy details that happened as we were going towards the elk that are pretty comical to look back on. But yeah, it makes for a good story. So
I'm excited to see.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see what becomes of the film because I've heard the details both from you and from Ben, and it's quite the cinematic adventure, I would say.
Yeah, Ben's probably gonna have to dub over and narrate a lot of it because it might be inappropriate. Other than that, did a little bit of goose hunting, came back with two goose a couple weeks ago, and that's really it. I'm just kind of been coasting now.
Nice, man. Well, congrats. Sounds like it's a good season so far. So
yeah, thanks.
Over to you, Emily.
It's just been crazy at work, so there hasn't been a whole lot of hunting going on, but we do have our holiday antlerless season coming up that we are going to host some veterans and get some meat down for them, and then we're going to take some more veterans down to Texas after Christmas. So that's what we have in the books right now in the near future.
Nice. That'll be fun. How's the weather there?
Oh my gosh, it's been so weird. It's been like the other night it was super bad wind and lightning, no rain, no nothing. It was just like tornado type wind with just like crazy lightning in December. And it wasn't that cold. And like right now it's 52 degrees at, you know, 7:48 p.m. It's weird temperature. I don't know. Oklahoma right now is not doing what it should be doing in December.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty standard for Oklahoma weather, like unpredictable.
This is actually more unpredictable than normal. Like, I haven't worn, like, long underwear very often this year, and that's very abnormal.
Okay. All right, well, anything else on your guys' mind before I introduce our guest?
Let's do this.
All right. Well, actually, I'm going to introduce you, and then I'm going to let you introduce yourself, as weird as that sounds. I'll share. So Cassie and I interacted a little bit on social media, and I saw a post about soap making that you were chatting about with some folks on a page. Where you were saying, "Hey, everybody, don't throw away your game fats," and we've done a lot of conversations. We did a whole episode with the Elevated Wild crew on different uses for different game fats based on an article they wrote, but we've never touched on soap making. And even though it's kind of out of the realm of cooking, I guess it's still cooking in a way. Maybe not for consumption, unless you say bad words, your mom washes your mouth out with soap, but that's a different story. But I think it's something really cool and something really interesting, and it falls in line with the whole concept that we really get behind about using the entirety of the animal. So, Cassiel, go ahead, and if you could introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, guys. So I am from the west coast of Washington originally. That's where I grew up when I was little. Spent a lot of time in eastern Washington on my grandparents' farm. So that's where I really learned to be outside, I guess. And then from there, I moved to Idaho when I went into grad school. I was in Idaho for 4 years, loved it. If I could claim that was my home, than I would. And then I moved to Colorado 3 years ago for a job opportunity. So it's been a bit of bouncing around the West, and I'm thinking this is the farthest east I'm gonna go. And hopefully I'll be here a while. So right now I live, when I moved to Colorado originally, I had a job in Boulder. Mm-hmm. So I lived there for a little while. Eventually moved over to Thornton, so a little bit closer to Denver. And then in January of this year, I moved to the San Luis Valley, which is in southwest Colorado. Okay. And it is beautiful, remote, tons of public land. It is a very poor area. I think it's the fifth poorest county in the state. But what it lacks in, I guess, ease of going to the grocery store or running out to buy a Starbucks or something, it makes up for in everything else, the views, the opportunities, and it's been a real fun experience being out here so far. And I guess that's only a little bit about where I am. So I sit right now on the board for the Colorado chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. I'm an Artemis ambassador, which is a subsidiary of the Wildlife Federation, the NWF, and I work with a couple different outdoor type organizations to try to promote outdoor opportunities, I guess, and one of the more recent projects I've been working on with BHA is this Women in the Woods programming. So that's been my big push with them lately. In my day job, I'm a material scientist. That takes up the majority of my time in reality. So this is the kind of stuff I do for fun when I'm not doing that kind of stuff.
That's fair. Yeah, I hear you on that. If only I could do this for all my day, this would be great. But no, thanks for sharing your story and kind of what you're involved in. So how's the season been this year for you? What great grand or any adventures have you been on?
It's been pretty good. I had several big game tags. I went out, I had a buck tag, and then I had a cow, elk, and antlered elk tag, all right here, basically where I live. But unfortunately, I really did not have much opportunity to go out for elk. I harvested my mule deer buck, which was fantastic because I had been on a couple year dry spell. And I was really grateful for that opportunity. And, you know, there's some things I'm missing, like some ice fishing opportunities that I'm hoping come up again soon. But one of the really neat things about living down here so far is that there's a lot more waterfowl hunting than over in on the eastern side of Colorado. And so I've been able to go out for waterfowl a lot more than I ever have before. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm not great at it by any means, but I really enjoy it.
That's awesome.
Is that still part of the central flyway, the eastern part of Colorado?
It is. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I think it might split. I think it might be part of the Western Flyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not sure where the boundary is, so this is the big migration route for the cranes. So there's a huge crane migration that comes through here, but you cannot hunt cranes, sandhill cranes, in this area because it's a huge, like nesting and migration route.
Oh.
Hmm. Okay.
That's interesting. Yeah, I picked up a crane permit this year and intended to go, and then I realized somebody quickly told me, it was like, oh, you already missed it. And I was like, oh.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, well, okay.
Yeah, that sucks when that happens.
Yeah. It's like, well, I'm the noob Colorado guy. So, and I've been trying to do some of the same, like exploring the waterfowl opportunities, and I'm definitely running into what you're mentioning is like, in eastern Colorado, there's not much opportunity. It's a lot of the, I find some of the reservoirs are very quickly reserved for their blinds. And Colin and I went out while he was here, and we happened to hop in like at the end of the day and hunt the evening, and just like the geese were high and wide, and it was a little bit challenging. But I see them. It's so frustrating because I take my daughter to school and I'm on like the eastern edge of Denver, and I must see every day thousands of geese just flying around. Mm-hmm. But it's all like all the land out here is owned by development corporations for the airport and all that other stuff like that. And it's just like there must sit hundreds of geese on each little section of land. Yeah. And I'm just like, it's just untouchable.
I know. It's so frustrating when you see a flock, 400 geese coming into land, and you know there's nowhere within 50 miles that you could go to hunt even if you wanted to.
Yep.
But
yeah. But that's a well.
Most,
that's yeah,
how it
that's
is.
That's how the cookie crumbles. But I'm starting to find some little pockets. I think I'll have it worked out probably by the end of the year, and then I'll be ready for next year, and then I'll have like a definitive plan. Is the hope. So well, that's good. I'm glad you're.
Yeah, I've heard that if you get up into the mountains, if you find small ponds mm-hmm. in the mountains, there's some real good opportunity up there.
That's good to know. That's a good tip. I've been trying to keep an eye out as we've cruising around, but I haven't found a honey hole up there yet. So this last little cold snap pushed a lot of birds down. I've noticed an increase in numbers over the past week or so. So mm-hmm. hopefully that continues.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say? So do you do any out-of-state hunting, or you kind of just stick to Colorado?
I put in for Wyoming pronghorn tags every year. I don't put in for points up there, but I do the I can't remember. I think it's like called the leftover. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's the real cheap. It's like $50 for a tag. And it's doe tags only. They have them for whitetail also, but I put in for those every year. And when I first moved down here, I put a bunch of time into looking at draws, studying units, percentage of public land, percentage of harvest. And I found a unit, got tags for me and my husband and my brother-in-law, and we had a great hunt. We got two tags each. And then from there, the draw odds mm-hmm. dropped because, you know, it got more popular, a little bit harder for out-of-staters. And so that was a one-time deal for me. It hasn't happened again, but I'm going to keep trying. And I have a lifetime license in Idaho. So I've hunted there once since we moved back, or sorry, since we've moved to Colorado. But I don't have plans to go back yet. Hopefully soon, though. The out-of-state tags are pretty expensive. I mean, I guess it's all relative, right? But I haven't gone back yet, and I don't have plans to anytime soon, probably.
Yeah, no worries. I was thinking, I think they Ben, he's our managing editor for the writing side. He and I were chatting the other day because we were looking at the Idaho draw. Like opened up, and he's like, last year it closed and like all the tags sold out in like 3 hours. And I was like, that's insane. So mm-hmm. something I'd like to make it up there. I haven't been to Idaho. I think Idaho and Washington are still on my list of places to go in the world. But, mm-hmm. I heard beautiful or great things about how beautiful it is.
You hear two things, right? You either hear that it's the best place ever, or you hear that it's terrible.
That's fair.
And the folks that seem to think that there's nothing there have probably only stayed on the highway, mm-hmm. which if you've only stayed on the highway, then that's definitely true, and that's that's okay. Once you head north, it's a whole different story.
Yep, I believe it. And sometimes people are just a little too intimidated to venture off, which that's where you find the good stuff at. So
right.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
I do have a couple questions, and these are some questions that we like to ask everybody. So what are three items in your freezer that you're looking forward to cooking?
Yeah, I've got some weird stuff in my freezer always.
Yes.
right now, I guess the things that I'm most looking forward to are not terribly exciting, but the first one is my deer from this season. For the first time ever, I hung and dry aged the entire thing. I do all of my butchering myself, and so I dry aged the whole thing before I processed it and got it in the freezer. And I'd always just got it home, butchered right away, right into the freezer. And I just, you know, you hear like, you have to dry age, or you should, or you should try it, or it makes a big mm-hmm. difference. And for some reason in my mind, it's always, I'm sure, but I doubt it's that big of a difference. You know, it's just an extra step. But anyway, I did that for the first time, and I can say that it makes a difference. And it seemed, it was a young buck this year, so maybe that's to thank for it. But, it's really, really good meat, and I'm looking forward to every bit that I cook from that.
Got one of those too.
The second thing, a young one. I told myself this year, because like I said, I kind of had a dry spell, so I told myself this year the first legal buck I saw was going in my freezer, and that's what I did. So
nice.
I have no regrets. I regret nothing. So The other thing is, so since we moved out to the valley, we've been raising our own livestock, or at least starting to. And so I got a bunch of chickens this year, and I processed all of them. And, you know, like, chicken is not terribly exciting, but for the first time ever, I have all of the weird bits, and I'm a big fan of weird bits.
Yeah.
Like, we have, like rooster testicles, which is not really appealing, but...
That is a weird bit I haven't heard yet.
Yeah, those are something you can eat, and apparently are supposed to be great. But what I'm looking forward to more is, like, feet and the heads and all of that stuff that you put in a like a pressure cooker for a few hours and make that really collagen rich like gelatiny bone broth. I love that. And I've been doing that with the carcasses so far, but I haven't done all of the heads and feet yet, so I'm really looking forward to that. And then the last thing is the pig. We had a pig. I had a pig that we butchered this last year. And I have the whole thing broken down. That was an experience. I assumed that processing a pig would be very similar to a deer or an elk, and I was very wrong. I'm sure that, like, the muscle groups in theory are the same, but it is a very different experience, especially when you're butchering a pig in, like, 90-degree heat because you bought it in the wrong season. Anyway, we have all of that in the freezer, and we have the head, the whole entire head, stored, waiting to be roasted. And we're going to try to roast the whole thing on the smoker. And I've heard it's great. I've seen people do it. And so I'm excited to try that, but it's going to be a whole endeavor.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Might be tricky.
Was it domestic or wild?
It was domestic. I have never hunted pig. Like, I've never been down. I think we were supposed to have them down in Southeast Colorado a little bit, maybe, but I haven't been hunting in other states that have pig. I really want to, though. If anybody has, a plot in Texas that they need some pigs taken care of.
We got you. You come on.
Give me a
call. We'll take the entire Harvesting Nature crew.
Okay.
And we can go hard.
Perfect. Hunt.
Come on.
Okay.
I'm down for that.
Okay, it's a date.
Don't threaten me with a good time. Yeah. Sorry, Colin. Go ahead.
My dad sent me a video a little while ago of I forget where it was. It was somewhere in like Eastern Europe, but they cook an entire cow's head and wrap it in some kind of material. I think it's just like a cloth, but then they put it in like the oven and everything, and they like roast the entire cow's head as is. Nothing else, just the head.
It's probably delicious.
I sent it to our little group chat, and there's probably some wild game application to that too. But yeah, I'm sure it's great.
I tried a moose head this year, so there was a moose that got whacked. It just got center punched on the highway, and we ended up with the head from it. And I tried to roast it in the ground. Mm-hmm. You know how they do it, like on a big bed of charcoal.
That's what this was. It was in the ground. Yeah.
This turned into it, our soil is like heavy clay. So I had this big like pit fire, super hot, huge, buried the head, covered it with dirt like you're supposed to, and I came back a couple hours later and it was just like the fire had gone out completely. It was smothered, like nothing happened at all. It was just completely raw.
I thought you were gonna say it was like a big clay brick with just a moose head inside.
No, so it was
I guess educate us on people who don't roast animal heads. What are you doing with it? Are you eating just like the jaw meat and the head meat and the brain?
Yeah, different kinds of. I probably wouldn't do brain.
I wouldn't either, but I'm just asking. Is this normal practice?
Yeah, I think you could. I don't know, so nobody quote me on that. I don't know if you could eat the brain or not. I'm sure you could in theory, but I wouldn't. But different kinds of animals, right, like the pig and the cow, they have a lot of muscles that hold their jaw and their face together. And like a pig head, even when you take it all the way up, they're like big old thick necks. So there's a lot of meat on the front of that face, and even like the ears and the snout, like all of it. You can eat. You can chop it up and turn it into like tacos or whatever. It's like the kind of stuff that looks weird until you chop it up, right? And then it's all just meat.
Yeah, we do Euros on stuff like that, and there's so much meat around. And, like, we've taken alligators, and we've taken the jaw meat off the alligators. But, like, you know, pigs, you kill so many pigs, it's like, whatever. We're just going to do the Euros on it. And there's so much meat there that I guess we're probably missing out on.
Guanciale, isn't that a cured pig
and
cheek?
Jowls. Pig
Colin had a 25-cent word.
Jowls. Yeah.
Pig jowls.
So that's a...
Guanciale. I'll put that in the notes.
Common spelling. Could use it in a sentence. No, I was thinking, so we recently had Jesse Griffiths on, I guess it was earlier in the year, midpoint in the year, and he has the hog book, and there's a roasted pig head in there, recipe, which would be very applicable. But yeah, I think you can do a lot of things too. You know, you look at traditional French cookery and you get like the head cheese or like some of the terrines where you're starting to use the meat and the collagens and stuff like that. Like that stuff's really, really good. Yeah. But yeah.
Some real good potted meat.
Yeah. That's delicious stuff. So man, that's it. That's awesome.
You're getting into the bones like soap.
What? Yeah, I was just about to say what a segue. I'm just gonna go ahead and sign off, Emily. You got the show now. Well, now, all right. So let's get into it. So obviously, we're talking about soap making now. So, however, did you arrive at the point of making soap from Wild Game? It's like.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way that I've gotten into all this other junk is like I'm real, real interested in all versions of using all the weird bits, right? And so full on, like nose to tail, whatever I can use, I want to know how. And I want to make it something that it's like not that it can be used or in theory I could eat it or use it, but I want to, you know, right? So that's kind of what got me started is I saw some lady online talking about soap making or like maybe I saw some old school homestead soap making thing. I can't really remember about how it used to be made. Historically, soap was just made with animal fat and potash, right? Potash, right? Just like a real fundamental version of lye. And I was thinking, I was like, well, if people are talking about making tallow soap because people go and buy fatback or they'll buy tallow from butcher shops and cut it up and make tallow products, candles, soap, all that kind of stuff. I was like, if people are doing that, why can't I do that with deer or elk or whatever other animal has a bunch of fat on it? Because you hear all the time about how it's, well, and anybody that's tried to eat it, you know it's not real tasty. It coats your mouth.
Yeah, a bit waxy.
It's just not something you really want to eat, right? And so I wanted to be able to use that portion of any animal I kill just as much as I use everything else. And so I looked into recipes for tallow soap or how to render tallow, and that's just kind of how it just went from there. And it ended up being a lot more simple than I expected it to be.
So what's if you give us like a high level view, like what are the components in soap and like, I guess maybe I'm thinking of it more complex than it is, but I don't know.
It's really, really simple. So at its core, all soap is lye and fat. That's all you need. So, back in the day, soap making was like a once a year process, and it was done typically at the same time as harvest, like animal harvest, because as you're butchering all the animals, you have all this excess tallow. And so when you pile that all up, you don't want to store it all, right? And you don't want it to go rancid or anything. And so while you're doing this butchering, you would also make your batch of soap for the year. And you would boil fat bits, just random fat bits with whatever version of lye they had, and make your soap for the year. And So really, that's all you need. And people make it real fancy now. Like, you see some bars of soap. I've seen some in the grocery store that are like $7 or $8 a bar or something like that. You know, like, people have really gone above and beyond with ingredients and all that kind of stuff. But really, all it is some kind of fat and lye. And then what that process does is called saponification. And so it breaks down the lye, sodium hydroxide, which is like, it's extremely caustic. So like, if you've seen the movie Fight Club, where the guy kisses the other guy's hand and then dumps that powder on it and it burns his skin off, that's lye. And so that powder reacts with fat, and it, same reason you can use it as drain cleaner is the reason why it makes soap, is because it reacts with organics and it creates this kind of chemical process. And if you have it in the right ratios, you end up with soap.
So is this like, could this be a dangerous process?
I mean, I guess if you were like really, I wouldn't give it to my, like, I wouldn't give it to a 5-year-old to do. But I would maybe give it to a 5-year-old to help with, you know. It's one of those things where, you know, as long as you're being careful of the lie part itself, the rest of it's totally fine. But I've seen videos of folks with like full on goggles, rubber gloves, aprons, like going outside in the parking lot to, like, you know, and it's not that it's not that dangerous. Yeah, you don't want to like stick your face over the lye water mixture and like breathe it in. But if you just like put it on your counter and don't stand over it, like treat it like chopping onions, you'll probably be okay.
That's a good tip.
Probably.
It's very relatable. Yeah.
Just keep your face like far enough away from it that you don't cry.
Yeah. So, in your experience of the game fats, which has worked best?
I've primarily used elk so far because that's what I've gotten my hands on. Before I had elk, so I started this during my dry spell of not having animals to use myself. And I started getting elk fat from my friend Spencer. You guys might know, I don't know. He's owns High Country Harvest. So he processes a lot of animals each year. And he gave me a couple like gallon Ziploc bags of fat. And that's how I started. And so the very first time I tried from a pronghorn that I shot in Wyoming pretty early in the season. And it had no fat on it, really. It had like maybe a handful. But I was like, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to try it. And yeah, it didn't work. but after getting the elk fat, that's been pretty good. And I've just recently made some with deer fat, and it's pretty much the same, very similar.
Okay, that's good to know. So if I've got, so say next week I go shoot my elk, and I've now got an elk. One, how much fat, I guess, how much fat do you need? How much would you recommend, or can you play with the ratios? And then how do I save it? Can I freeze it, or do I need to do it like immediately?
No, in every batch, so each batch of soap I make is like it makes a log that's maybe like 3 inches wide, 3 or 4 inches wide by 3 or 4 inches high, and about 10 or 12 inches long, I guess. So it's like a loaf, kind of like a loaf of soap. And I think I use in each of those batches, I mix my fat sources, but in each of those I use around 11 ounces of tallow, if that helps you. So you don't need a lot. Like, the deer that I got this year wasn't super fatty, but just the tallow, it's not really called tallow on game, I guess, but that's... the fat off of the hind quarters, you know, like that rump region, that's where they store a lot of their fat. That's where I get most of it off of. And, that was plenty. That's enough for probably a couple batches of soap off of the one deer.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and in order to store it, so I think one of the things that's maybe a little bit intimidating talking to a few people who want to try this but don't really know where to start is like the cleaning, like you said, storing it and cleaning it and all that. Mm-hmm. When you cut the fat off of your animal, you don't need to worry about it being like real clean. And all you have to do is trim it off. It's fine if it has bits of dirt and meat and hair and all of that. Doesn't matter. It's all going to come out in the washing process. So just take all of it off that you can get. Any little chunk of fat that you would normally put in your discard pile or your trash pile, just throw mm-hmm. it in a Ziploc bag, like a gallon Ziploc bag, squeeze the air out of it and put it in the freezer. And just, you can just leave it until, like, say you have an animal that's doesn't have any fat on it at all, or you just don't have time or whatever, you can just keep storing it in the bags or the same bag until you've got enough to do a rendering process.
Okay. Do you think bear fat would work?
I think people like to eat bear fat, so
that's definitely true.
So I would say probably save the stuff that you can eat for eating. I've never had bear fat. I've never shot a bear. And I've never used it for soap. But there's no reason why it wouldn't work. It's fat. I mean, you okay. can use a whole range of it. So what it changes, so what would change on the different kinds of fat you can use, is that it has like different textures in the finished product.
So I'd probably lean towards like bear fat shampoo. This yeah. is like
yeah, something like that.
A bar of bear fat soap.
Yeah. Gotta get your hands on like that jar of snake oil and make snake oil soap or something like that.
Oh man. That's like $1 million product right there. I don't know, there's some have you heard like people are trying to push the culinary use of like pythons from down in yes. the Everglades. This is mm-hmm. a big deal when I was in. They're like, no, it's great. Like you can use the fat for cooking, and you're like, oh, this. And I was like, ooh, like, I don't know. There's some tests there. They're saying we probably shouldn't be consuming that. Yeah. But
anything they can do to get rid of them.
Oh, it's a race. I don't know that they're trying to commercialize it. So like, hey, we're going to sell this python meat. And it's just like, I don't know how.
I've heard them trying to work with like big celebrities to try to get like belts and, you know, to make it a fashion statement to have their mm-hmm. skins. But I think we've got a niche here where we just like render them all down and make our own version python of belt. Everglades soap.
Python soap.
I think we've got
products. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help wash the Everglades
the
clean.
Tagline.
Yeah, there you go. There we go. Our slogan.
Yeah. Gotta trademark that.
Yep. You heard it first here, folks. All right. So now I've got my fat in a Ziploc bag. I've stored mm-hmm. it. Now we come back a couple weeks later. I thawed it out. Aside from this fat, I get my Ziploc bag of fat on the table, mm-hmm. what other ingredients would I be looking at?
So first is the rendering process. And we don't have to go through like the whole rendering process, but you render it the same way you would any other fat, in that you fill up a big pot with water and your fat and let it simmer for a few hours. And then you pour that into some kind of container and you let it get hard. The fat floats to the surface and all the other dirt, so like I was saying, the hair or the meat or all that other stuff, stays in the water down below. And so you pull that top layer of fat off. And then I normally do one or two cleaning steps after that, where I take that separated fat, put it in another pot with clean water, bring it up to a boil, let it solidify again, and then I'll do that one more time. And by the end, you have a pure white, no debris, pretty much no smell product that is just pure fat.
That's
and all
so
the
cool.
other
That's...
all the other junk is left behind.
So that rendering process,
it's wet rendering, yeah.
I think it's called wet rendering. Yeah, we've talked about it a little before, with use for like waterfowl to get the fats out of like the skin of waterfowl and stuff like that. Mm. And then Emily, you guys put out a great video when you did the bear fat, right? But you guys did it. You guys did kind of a different rendering method,
because
correct? Because that was more for culinary use.
And so we were rendering bear fat for cooking and eating purposes. So, no.
But not for shampoo.
So you wanted to keep the flavor, right?
It was freaking fantastic. Yeah. It was like the most amazing thing. But it makes sense to do it the way you're talking about for soap, which is amazing.
Yeah,
removes all the impurities and all the smell.
And I will say you can render for culinary use that way as well. Just like you just
at
said right
point,
now, you're gonna get a more
if
neutral.
If you wanted
product.
To add like a scent in it, say like pine needles or something, get some of that fresh pine scent. When do you do that?
Yeah, Now you have say you've done that rendering and cleaning process.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done that, you've got your tallow. Now you need, if you're going to use a mixture of fats, you need those. So I typically use tallow, olive oil, and coconut oil. Not like one third, but I use primarily tallow and I use a little bit of the other two. And there's a lot of documentation you can find online for what properties different kinds of oils leave in your soap. But olive oil is like a really nice, like it leaves a really smooth and like sensitive skin moisturizing bar. The tallow itself is really nice for your skin. It mimics your natural oils really well. So it's just really nice for dry skin. I actually make just like a regular tallow balm also for my knuckles because they get destroyed in the winter.
Oh, man, you're so terrible right now.
Yeah. And so, I mean, if that's – so say the whole soap process is not for you, you could still do that rendering process and then just like mix in a little bit of olive oil with your tallow at the end and then bam, balm, you're done. Easy. But for the soap process, you'll need all of your oils, like I mentioned, all your fats. And then you need your sodium hydroxide, your lye. You'll need a scale, maybe a thermometer. You don't necessarily have to have one, but you can just use your same kitchen thermometer that you use for everything else. That's what I do. And then a glass or Pyrex bowl or plastic. You don't want to use metal because it'll react with the saponification process. And so what you do is you melt all of your fats together. So they're liquid, and then you put your sodium hydroxide powder into your measured amount of water, which again, these are the exact ratios. You can find calculators for all over on the internet. So you have your fat, your sodium hydroxide, and water mixture. You pour them together. You use like an immersion blender or even like a little, like, I wouldn't say a whisk because it'll take a really long time, but like, you know, like your egg beater type.
Oh yeah,
whisk.
Like a cake, the cake beater. Yeah.
Yes. I can't remember what it's called.
I can't remember either. Wow.
Yeah. You get everybody live and then all the words go out the window. But, and then I use an immersion blender and you just stick it in, turn it on and wait for about, I don't know, you can see the process happening. It normally takes me about 3 minutes. And then when you lift the immersion blender out, it'll almost look like pudding. And that's how you know pretty much you're done. And at that point, that's when you add your scent, whatever scent you want to add. And then you just mix it all up in there and then you pour it into any kind of mold you have. And then you let it sit for about a day, 2 days until it's hard. Take it out of the mold, cut it up. Normally I let it sit in a window or something for about a week or two so it can firm up, because right when your soap is fresh, it still has a higher moisture content.
Mm.
And so if you go to like put it in the shower, it'll dissolve a lot faster. So I set it out and let it dry for a while and then it lasts longer.
Huh. I wonder, and this you may not have the answer to this. We may have to look at, someone may need to reference this, but if they're in a more humid climate, because I've noticed like Denver, Colorado is very dry. So like you can dry herbs here, but like where I used to live in the Florida Keys, it was humid and salty all the time. And so you couldn't dry herbs. They would just turn nasty. So I wonder if someone may have to use like a dehydrator or something like that to kind of increase that process.
Yeah, I'd be wary of drawing too much of the moisture out, because then you might end up with like really brittle bars. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure.
That's good. We can circle around. I'll look that up and see. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, from the stuff I've read, you know, different soap making processes from all over the place, and I don't think the idea is to like really dry it out to make it like a real dried product, but just to get some of the residual moisture out. So it probably doesn't have to be, you know, too terribly.
We're not talking like
intense of a drying process.
Motel soap bars. We're looking for a little step above that.
Yeah, right. Not too much chalk.
Exactly. So how long does it normally keep for once you've got it?
I haven't found the spoiling stage yet. I make soap maybe twice a year right now. And I had a few bars that I had like lost, I guess, when we moved, and then I found them again maybe a year and a half later, and they had a little bit more of a fatty smell to them. But not rancid by any means. And they still worked just as well as they did when they were fresh. Those were just stored under my sink. So it's not like I had them in some kind of, you know, vacuum sealed freezer bag and stored in a deep freeze or something like that. So I don't know. I think if you make a batch to begin with, you're not going to, and just like see how you like it, you're probably not going to have too much of an issue with it going bad. You know, you're not talking like a 1 month spoiling process. You're probably looking at like a 6 months or a year.
Everybody's taking baths every day. We have to use the soap.
I guess if you're really concerned, you can always freeze it, which is a whole other site. Is why do you have soap in your freezer? But yeah. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's next to the it's next to the rooster testicles, so don't worry about that.
Yeah. Just don't look in my freezer. It's better off that way.
What do you scents for yours?
I do, and I just, you know, one of the really neat things about making your own soap is that. It's a high quality product. It's cheap. You know exactly what goes in it, and you can tailor it. Like I was saying, sometimes I put olive oil, sometimes I put more or less, whatever. You can tailor it to whatever you want it to be for. And you can make it smell however you want. So like if you're really feeling in the Christmas spirit, you can do, you know, sugar cookies and whatever the most common Walmart candle smell is right now for
just
Christmas smell.
Next year.
Yeah. Snowflake smell. For your fall season, you can have your pumpkin spice tallow bars.
Just don't eat them.
I normally just keep like a small stash of different essential oils. And I'll just mix those based off of whatever I'm feeling. There's websites that sell pre-mixed scents. And I've had two. There's one called Brambleberry is the website. And they have this one called Juniper and Sage. I don't know. When I first started using that, I was like, this is so smart to use with like
a
beer or something. It was just like, it just seemed right. But I normally do like lavender or tea tree or lemon,
This is like an entrepreneur episode. Cause that's like, now we're onto something else. Now you got like, natural scents for recommended game. You could do like cornfield for white-tailed deer and, you know.
Yeah. I had a whole plan. I had stamps and stuff and like different scents I was going to use for different game species. And I was like, one, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't have a company. Two, I'm not making this in enough quantity to actually sell. It's just for myself. So I don't know why I'm going through this much effort. But you can really get, you know, you can really get creative with it. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. No, man, it's such a cool process. I definitely, I'm excited, hopefully, to fill these last two tags. And I think I'm going to carve out some fat for sure.
Yeah. Save yourself a bag.
We get real particular about the soaps we use here at the house, especially my wife with the kids. Kids' skin's kind of sensitive. So some of the normal stuff that you would buy doesn't really work well for them. Plus it's like it adds that extra little layer to it of like, I made the soap, it's pretty awesome and it's useful.
Yeah.
And if you say bad words, I'll wash your mouth out with it.
And you know what's in it, so you don't feel too bad about getting poison, right? You know exactly.
Did you enjoy that elk steak for dinner? Well, now I have some elk soap.
Have you ever gone into like candle
making? No.
With fats? Oh man, I know this is kind of outside the soap realm, but
I haven't. I definitely have started thinking about it. But I just haven't. Where I'm planning on hopefully getting some bees next year, so I'm hoping to do like beeswax. But I just haven't had so much tallow stored up that I felt like I could make enough candles to make it worth all of the supplies you need to buy to begin with. But I have plenty to keep me in soap. Yeah. But I don't have enough to keep me in soap and a fresh supply of candles. So I choose my battles for now. But I've definitely been encouraging folks to like just save your fat. If you're some, like, I understand there are times when you cannot save anything extra. Like I understand that. But if you're in a position where you can, then, you know, you might as well give it a shot. And if you don't want to try it yourself, pass it off to somebody who will. Because I've talked to enough people that are at least willing to try it. Some folks are a little bit intimidated by the process because maybe it kind of sounds weird to begin with. But I think once folks get through the first jab at it, it's definitely worth it. And especially if you're somebody who, you know, watches what's in, you know, the products you're buying, like your soaps or whatever. I mean, you can't beat it. I went through a period of like trying to buy certain kinds of soaps or only using stuff with ingredients I recognized or and I ended up buying like, you know, $5 bars of soap each time. And that, you know, it's I can make an entire, you know, quarter of a year's worth for probably the same price.
That's crazy.
Yeah, have you ever done like return on investment kind of cost analysis for the soap?
I haven't, but it's so low. I mean, okay, if you take out the price of hunting,
definitely not.
Like, I'm not pretending that I'm like saving money by hunting by any means, but if you take out the price of big game hunting in general, and you take it as like, okay, this is a byproduct of something I'm already doing. All right, so you have that. The process of rendering is practically free. All you need is electricity and water, or a fire, I guess, if you do it that way. And then the actual soap making ingredients are lye, which I just bought a case of two, and I think they're a pound each, and it was $16
on Amazon, I think.
Yeah, I was just looking
at one food grade for 1 pound jar for $9.99 on Amazon.
Yeah, and it's cheap, and you use like, you know, maybe between 10 and 12 ounces for a batch of soap. And then the other ingredients are like olive oil. And so that's for my product. Like, you could use just tallow. You could use just tallow and lye, and that's perfectly legit. I have really dry skin, so I add some other stuff. Coconut oil is really good for like a really strong cleaning. Like, so if you had a bar of soap that you put in your workshop to get off the engine grease. You could do like coconut oil, like pure coconut oil. You know, it's like really strong soap. So I do a mixture of those. So it's like really cleansing. The towel is really good for your skin. The olive oil is like really good for moisturizing sensitive skin. But you can do whatever you want. You can add avocado oil, almond oil, and whatever. You know, you can find 50
what about truffle oil?
I don't know if you'd want to smell like truffle oil.
You could do that.
Yeah, in
I mean,
food.
I love the smell of
a good pasta dish. The
sky
oil
is your
great,
limit.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be
garlic,
I don't want to smell
garlic
like a
truffle
walking ravioli
soap.
Dish or something. So.
Just have like a pack of dogs following me around everywhere. They're like, what's that delicious smell?
Yeah, you can do anything really, but all of those ingredients, like I think I got a tub of coconut oil at Costco for I don't know, $10, something like that. And the olive oil probably costs the same. And I use the same stuff that I cook with generally. So it's like I bought all those probably close to the beginning of this year, and I still have them now. So the price is nominal for so far. I'm not like making enough to sell or anything like that. So just making enough for my family is like, it's very inexpensive.
It's such a cool thing. I'm like, I get excited about things like this, like very excited, because it's like, oh, I discovered not something new, but new to me. Like, oh, this is awesome. Like, and then I add this thing to the list to do, and oh, yeah.
Yep, one more thing on your list to do. Yeah, for every new project, like I am a new project starter and not always a project finisher, but this one is stuck for me. This has been something that I really enjoy doing, and I think it's worth it. So.
Awesome. Well, it's been fun. I think we're starting to wind down on the time. What's if somebody has a question or wanted to reach out to connect with you for, you know, your involvement in conservation or anything like that, what's a good way for them to connect with you?
I am on Facebook and on Instagram. My Facebook, I think, is just Cassie Smith, and same for my Instagram. I think it's _ksmith_co. That's a private account, so if you're real interested in adding me, you have to pass my screening exam. But I'm just kidding. But I just started a public account recently called the Front 40 Farm, and that's where we're going to be putting all of our little home study type projects. So you'll see, that's where, if you want to see videos on how to render fat, how to render elk tallow or deer tallow, go to the Front 40 Farm, all spelled out, on Instagram, and there are videos there.
I found it.
Show you how to do it.
Boom. You just got a new follower.
Has a sunflower on there.
Yes.
106.
I think your number is like
16. You have like 100. Yeah, you have 106.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Look at the turkeys.
Famous. Yeah, we just started that because we're going to, like, I mean, obviously I've got a day job, but I'm going to start trying to sell eggs and pasture-raised poultry and, you know, some pork and stuff as we go. So it's where I've read that you have to have, like, a legitimate presence to actually sell stuff. So I'm trying to put a forward page.
No, it's good.
I guess.
It's a good page. Those are some orange yolks on those eggs. I love it. Oh yeah, there you go. You talk about the whole soap.
I do too.
Two little videos there. That's awesome. Not little. There.
Yep. You can see me in my pajamas doing it because I clearly don't know how to social media.
It's okay. I cook in my pajamas all the time. Well, thanks for coming on tonight. This is kind of like the last section of the show, I guess you could call it. So we give everybody the opportunity for a last thought or an alibi, or if you have a question, whatever you want to leave us or the listeners with. So since you're the guest tonight, I'll give you the opportunity to go up first. And yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, just again, thanks for having me on. This has been fun. I'm definitely an introvert, so it's kind of a new experience for me, but this has been fun, and I'd like to encourage everyone to try the odd bits. Try something new and weird that you haven't done before, even if it looks awesome. Weird.
All right, Colin, last thought.
Yeah, just thanks for coming on. That was really cool. I've been curious about making soap, or that's why I asked the candle question too, you know, trying to use every last bit of an animal. But I don't know, rooster testicles might still be a long way off for me. But no, it's really cool. Hopefully we can get like a recipe or something, like just a basic soap recipe, and I think we can probably work something out and post that up, and that'd be really cool.
Yeah,
I can send you guys my go-to recipe as well, and you guys can post a link to it or something like
Sweet,
that.
Yeah, we could definitely do that. Emily, last thought.
No, this is like super awesome. This is like something that I'm like, I would be so into. It's kind of overwhelming. So you made it sound very simple and something that anybody can do. And no, I loved it. Like, I loved listening. I didn't speak much because I was just like absorbing everything. So it was great.
We'll tell you, that's a rarity.
Oh, hush.
No, I don't mean to be rude. It's all in jest. No, but thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. It was an awesome show. I'm excited. I can tell both, as Colin and Emily said, they're super excited too. So I think everybody will enjoy this episode, which is really good. And you know, it was awesome you to make the time to share it with us. And we got to know you a little better and learn about soap making and the Front 40 Farm, which I'm excited to follow too and see your progress there as well. So I will encourage everybody, go check out Front 40 Farm on social media, and if you got any any questions, let us know and stand by. I think we may put together some more content on this subject, because I think people are intrigued. So more to come on that. Stay tuned. But as always, our show notes will be available online, so you can scroll down and you'll see all the links, or you go to Harvest in Nature and our podcasts are there as well, and you can click the show note links there. And then make sure you're following Harvest in Nature on social media. Stay up to date with all the cool things that are going on here. And then don't forget about the hats for reviews. So whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. And have a good night.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8" Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.